Avery had to hand it to Lieutenant Commander Alcigny. The woman could plan an op. Her carefully disguised sloop, Walk of Shame, had been filled with a small arsenal of weapons, some of which Avery had never seen before. He and Byrne had both selected what Alcigny referred to as a battle rifle, a prototype long-barreled weapon with an optical scope. The two staff sergeants had thought the rifle's combination of range and accuracy would be a good fit for the long sight lines between the stacks of boxes in the cargo container. But that was before they knew they were going to end up floating high above the container's floor. When the freighter had been shot through with lasers and lost its gravity, Avery and Byrne had been shocked, to say the least. Fortunately, the lieutenant commander had outfitted them with bulky black vacuum suits and helmets with clear visors. When the bright tip of some sort of boring device punched through the hull, the two staff sergeants had pushed off from their hiding places behind the boxes for the marginally better cover of the metal supports girding the freighter's upper hull. Avery firmed his grip on his battle rifle's trigger. The crosshairs in the weapon's scope were locked on the fourth alien, just now emerging from the shimmering field. Yes, the lieutenant commander could plan an op, he thought. But she hadn't planned for this. In their pre-mission briefing in an empty welcome wagon from Utgard up to the Tiara, Alcigny had told Avery and Byrne about a recent insurrectionist victory in Epsilon Eridanus, one they hadn't been informed of, even with their top-level clearances. About the same time as the two staff sergeants were struggling to take down the bomber in the restaurant on tribute, the Innies had hit the luxury liner National Holiday as it waited above the planet Reach. The ship was just completing its load-in of more than 1,500 civilian passengers on charter tour to Arcadia, a colony famous for its recreational amenities, when the pair of unmanned orbital taxis struck. The liner's captain had assumed the taxis were simply carrying late-arriving passengers. When they failed to comply with his docking commands, the captain had initiated evasive maneuvers, tried to deflect what he thought would be minor impacts. But the amount of explosives the Innies had packed into the taxis not only tore National Holiday in two, but also burned away the hull paint of every other ship in a 2-kilometer radius. The two staff sergeants had listened soberly to a recording on Jalan's compad of the captain's final words, heard how the former naval fighter pilot had calmly directed other ships out of his crippled liner's path, even as it dropped into Reach's atmosphere, bodies billowing from its breached staterooms, and began to burn. So far, Jalan had explained, Oni had managed to keep things under wraps, successfully spinning the Innies' hit as a tragic accident. Partly this was because the attack was so audacious. This was the first time the insurrectionists had hit a non-terrestrial target. And not only that, but they'd done it above Reach, the epicenter of UNSC power in Epsilon Eridanus. Even though the Innies claimed responsibility for the horrible loss of life, most people were too fearful to believe the rebels' claim. If they could lash out in plain view of the UNSC fleet, what was stopping them from hitting targets in other systems? Sol, for example, or Harvest. According to Jalan, Fleetcom had made it crystal clear that there could be no more national holidays. Oni went on high alert, and as soon as Section 3 got word of a freighter missing in Epsilon Indy, they'd authorized her to conduct a covert investigation. Just in case she needed to take exceptional action, Alcigny's superiors had ordered her to recruit Avery and Byrne.
Ma'am, we've got hostiles in the hold, Avery whispered into his helmet mic.
Take them out. Alcigny's reply was curt. Avery was supposed to maintain radio silence.
They aren't Innies.
Clarify.
Avery took a deep breath.
They're aliens.
He watched as the first three creatures that had come barreling through the barrier struggled to get hand and footholds, studied their long, bony beaks and large bloodshot eyes through their clear helmets.
Kind of like lizards without the tails.
There was a pause as Jalan, holding station in Walk of Shame some 200 kilometers distant from the freighter, considered Avery's words. But the staff sergeant knew it wouldn't be long before one of the aliens looked up and saw them lurking in the shadows between the beams.
Ma'am, I need orders, Avery persisted.
Try and take one alive, Alcigny replied. But don't let any escape. Over.
Roger that.
Avery hugged his battle rifle close. He hadn't had time to fire the weapon. He hoped its 9.5-millimeter high-penetration rounds would be sufficient to puncture the alien's iridescent suits.
Burn, get set.
Avery glanced at the other staff sergeant, positioned between a pair of beams to his left.
I'm firing on the leader.
He assumed the leader was the alien nearest the shimmering hole in the hull. It seemed more composed than the others, and also carried an obvious weapon, a silver, C-shaped pistol with green energy glowing between its tips. Avery hoped taking down the leader would make the other aliens, now splayed firmly on the floor, more eager to surrender. He took a breath and fired.